So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, my co-host, Brian Clinton, Coach Brian Clinton, as he's known, is not actually with us for this portion of the podcast today, but Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people, Oklahoma fans especially, who are probably reasonably a little nervous about this weekend's matchup against number 10 Alabama. This is probably the podcast for you, because there's a lot of uncertainty and probably some fear about this weekend going against Alabama. I am Jesse Crittenden. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, and I am joined for a special guest today from Tide Illustrated, the Alabama Rivals affiliate. I'm joined by Tony Tsoukalas. Tony Tsoukalas.
Did I get it right?
You told me before the pod, and then I messed it up.
Yeah, you're totally fine. It's Tsoukalas, but you got it. Nice rebound there. Yeah.
Nice rebound. Okay, I'll take that. But Tony Tsoukalas from Tide Illustrated, you do great stuff over there. You've been gracious enough to give us a few minutes. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to this this trip to Norman. I was telling you before the show, my best friend is from, he lives in Oklahoma City, went to OU. So this is one I've been looking forward to for a while.
I was going to ask you, I didn't ask before the pod. Did you get up to anything in Norman? Did you go to a restaurant or anything like that that you remember?
You know, I get Norman and Oklahoma City mixed up. Is there like a place called like Blackbirds or something?
Yeah.
Like that? I went there. Yeah.
What'd you think?
I liked it. It was really good. And then like we went there for a brunch almost, like an early lunch. Mm-hmm. And then we just kind of like toured around OU. I got to see the outside of the football stadium. I'll get to see the inside of it this weekend. But I think it was sometime maybe in like the summer a couple of years ago. So it wasn't really, none of the sports were in season. That's really the only time I can actually travel anyways. So, it was cool. I liked Norman, and I liked Oklahoma City the few times I've went there, either for him or for the college Women's College World Series. So yeah, I'm a fan.
Right. Well, and so you haven't made too many trips around here, but that's also kind of common, or that goes with how this is a rare matchup between Oklahoma and Alabama this weekend.
At least now it is. I mean, maybe it'll be a more common trip in the future now that y'all are part of the conference.
Yeah, I've never been to Tuscaloosa, so I'm really looking forward to that trip next season.
Barbecue out there. You know, I've never had, that's the mission this time, is I've never had really barbecue in Oklahoma City or Norman or anything like that. I've had Hideaway. I've mm-hmm. had a few burger places that my friend suggested. I've had steak at Cattleman's, but like never actual like just barbecue. So that's the mission this time out.
Well, I'll give you a couple early recs, and people in the comments will probably have way more, but Rudy's Barbecue is a staple around here. That's where Brent Venables does his weekly coaches show on Mondays. And then Billy Sims Barbecue, operated, you know, owned by obviously the famous Oklahoma running back. So there's probably a billion other places that people could recommend you, but those are two places I would recommend.
Are we in brisket territory?
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I thought. I figured, you know, being a Texas kid myself, I prefer brisket, but you don't really get it as much over here in the deep South. It's more like pulled pork. When I grew up, a barbecue sandwich was a chopped beef sandwich, now a barbecue sandwich over here is the pulled pork sandwich. I mean, they're both good. Don't get me wrong. I love pulled pork, but I grew up with the more of the brisket side. So yeah.
No, that's fair. I think, I love barbecue so much, but brisket, I love a brisket sandwich. I really, really do. But I got to tell you, Tony, I even with how disappointing his Oklahoma season has been, they're just the college football fan in me is really excited for this weekend. Just again, we don't see Oklahoma and Alabama on the field together too much. I wanted to ask you, I was pretty young when the 2002 and 2003 games happened. I think I was 7 in 2002, but do you remember those have been talked about a lot because those are, I mean, just a couple of the very few handful of matchups. Do you remember those games?
I don't. So I would have been 12. I'm not one of these people that I went to Alabama. So, but like before that, so I went to Alabama in 2008 and like, I didn't really even know anything about Alabama before then, you know? So, I do remember my dad's, so growing up in Texas, my dad's best friend is an Oklahoma fan, and I might have gone who did they play, what was the 02 season, refresh me on this.
02, so that for was Oklahoma. Huh,
for Oklahoma, what did they do that year?
So they went, I believe they went 12-2 that year, and that was 02. That was Nate Hibble at quarterback, and that was the game in Tuscaloosa where Oklahoma pulled off a fake punt.
Okay.
They won, yes. 20-13.
I have no recollection of that. I do, like, I want to say, like, they played a Big 12 championship in Houston one of those years, and it would have been around that time, and I went to it.
Okay. I think that's
against, like, Colorado. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah. God, this is testing my early memory a little bit.
I'm trying to think, like, it would have either been like 2000 and like 1 through like 3. I think I'm just trying to, like, if I'm going off my memory, I remember going to an OU game as a fan, like, with my dad's friend, cuz my dad couldn't make it. And my dad's friend Roy, he's a big Sooners fan, like, was like, well, shoot, I got another ticket. Does Tony want to come? And then I was like, yeah, sure. I know, like, so I ended up rooting for the Sooners, but yeah.
So they played in the Cotton Bowl in 2001.
This would have been, definitely been in Houston, so yeah.
Houston, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and it was a Big 12 championship game. I'm like,
what?
90. Yeah.
Wait, against Houston?
No, God. In Houston, I think. Yeah.
This is something I should know, because those are formative memories of me, but for some reason.
Yeah. Well, you would have been young. So if I was like 12, you would have been.
I was 6 in 02. I was 7 in 03. And I pride myself on being able, because I know they went 12-2, and I know Nate Hibble was the quarterback in 02, 01 and 02, but I'm sure I'm going to get killed in comments.
I know what it is now. It was the 02 season.
Okay.
I'm looking it up right now. Number 8 Oklahoma beat number 12 Colorado in the Big 12 championship game in Reliant. Yeah.
Yes.
That's it. I was at that game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you would have got to see Nate Hibble in the flesh. Yeah.
I hadn't at that point, like, no idea, you know. I knew Oklahoma was supposed to win, but I had no, you know, I was just, I wasn't by any means an Oklahoma fan. I was at that game because I was with my dad's friend, but that's about all I had.
Well, that's still, I mean, hey, that's great memory. And I gotta tell you, like I said, I mean, when you covering Oklahoma, I try, you know, I have this extensive history, you know, I've connected, my dad went to OU, my brother went to OU. And covering the team, this is my fourth season covering OU. I try to keep it, I try to be as objective as possible, but I gotta tell you that matching up against Bama, it's made me think of the 2014 Sugar Bowl when Trevor Knight had, I think he sold his soul to the devil. That's the only explanation. Yeah,
that was in the era of, like, random quarterbacks just coming alive against Alabama. And it seemed like every now and then you'd have, like, this one guy that would just, like, come alive and you'd come out of nowhere. Like, it's Steven Garcia for South Carolina in, what, 2010. You know, it's just like, where did this come from? But, yeah, I remember that game because I remember there was, like, from an Alabama standpoint, there was, like, a hope that, you know, okay, well, they didn't make the championship game, but, like, maybe they'll just blow the doors off of Oklahoma and, like, somehow they'll get, like, a shared title or whatever. And then Alabama came out slightly hot in that game And then once Oklahoma answered back, it's almost like Alabama just turned it off, and then Oklahoma just punished them. The only good thing from an Alabama standpoint of that game is I think that's like the game where you really saw like the beginning of Derrick Henry start to become super dominant.
I want to say the first play of the game or second play of the game, he ripped off like a 70-yard run.
Yeah,
I want to say that I remember that.
Yeah, that like kind of forced out of the next year, but yeah, no, Oklahoma beat him, and then the other one that really stands out is the Tua versus Kyler Murray game, where like Tua basically pitched the perfect game, That was just I was actually on the beat at that point.
I wasn't on the beat yet, but I was actually at that game. I drove from Tahlequah, Oklahoma to Miami, 25 hours straight through with a group of friends. Just to go watch that game as a college football fan.
I remember being bummed about covering that game because it was the first time I had to like fly on Christmas. Mm. Like I was, I remember being I was like at a New Orleans. Somehow I had a layover in New Orleans, so I was at the bar in the New Orleans airport alone on Christmas, and I was like, "This is like they make like movies about this. It's terrible." Like, yeah.
So I have had to travel on Christmas all 3 years I've been on the beat, travel on Christmas Day. And that's the thing that now I've never had to do that, but that's the thing that like, that's the behind the scenes stuff that like when you cover a program, a blue blood program, that like you're traveling a lot on holidays and specifically sometimes Christmas Day.
I'm hoping that Alabama gets so, like it's like selfishly, once you become like kind of a beat reporter, you start losing your fandom, but I am kind of rooting for Alabama to get this bye because it means that I don't have to travel right before Christmas. You know, that's just going to be such a pain of like trying to get over to like Indiana, or God forbid it's like Penn State, because that place is so hard to get to in terms of hotels and stuff. One of those two would just be a nightmare. Or shoot, I mean, maybe, you know, some bizarro world where they get dropped way down and then have to like play at Oregon or something, you know, like a million of those situations. I hope I'm not making some like drastic trip last minute right on the holidays, but maybe I will be.
But I was about to say that would also be par for the course of being on the beat, wouldn't it though?
Yeah it really is. It's tough.
Well, speaking about being on the beat, man, one thing I like to ask, because we try to have somebody from, you know, somebody on the beat for each team that Oklahoma plays come on the pod. And one thing I like to ask, and it's kind of a general question, but I think I've learned that, and I think I'm sure you've realized this too, that especially when you're covering a specific beat or you're following a specific team, you don't always know the ins and outs of a bunch of the other teams. And especially for me, when you're covering just Oklahoma, it's hard for me to always have a real sense of what's going on with someone else. So I wanted to ask you, just in a general sense, with Alabama this season, obviously Nick Saban's gone, Kalen DeBoer's taken over, had some struggles early in conference play. Seems like they've righted the ship a little bit. Just heading into these last couple of games with where Alabama sits right now, what's the vibe right now in Tuscaloosa? How does the team feel? How do the fans feel heading into this last stretch of the regular season? Just where are things at right now?
This has been like the biggest roller coaster season, because most of the time Alabama doesn't get a roller coaster season unless you count those roller coasters that go all the way to the top and then just fall, you know, because like that's kind of like when things fall apart when Alabama has weird seasons or bad seasons, it's because like things fall apart right at the end, or they stumble in the playoff or something. This one has been so bizarre because you beat Georgia, and then, you know, you've got all this momentum of like Kalen DeBoer was the best possible hire ever. You know, Saban, it's like he never left, you know, that Alabama's going to win forever. And then you lose to Vanderbilt, a team that like no one can fathom Alabama ever losing to Vanderbilt. And all of a sudden it goes from like everything's perfect to nothing's perfect. And like, this is, you know, the dynasty's completely dead. Kalen DeBoer was the wrong hire, blah, 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 blah. You get a little bit more momentum, but then you actually kind of stumble into those next few games. So like, it just starts building up this like, Kalen DeBoer is the wrong choice. And then you lose to Tennessee for the second time in 3 years. And like, that's tough. At that point, you know, like the playoffs were a possibility, but more people were thinking like, it's probably, they're probably going to lose again, you know? So it's like, you kind of had that you were dealing with. And now after, you know, you beat Missouri and then you beat LSU and you look really convincing in those two games. Obviously you beat Mercer too, but everyone expected that. Now you're looking at this playoff picture and like people are picking Alabama to win the SEC. So it's like this weird, like, I guess the vibes are super high right now. But on the same hand, I just remember a month ago when like, you know, everyone's pets' heads were falling off. You know, I mean, it's just like, it's like, I don't, it's kind of hard to judge. I mean, look, things are great. If they lose to Oklahoma this weekend, there'll be the fire dim, the Bohr campaigns coming up again. It's just, it's crazy how roller coaster this season has been.
Yeah, man, it's that's if I've learned anything, that the how much the narrative can change or how much things can change week to week. Because I mean, even Oklahoma, they lose a tough one to Tennessee, then they come back and win at Bama. And now you're going to the bye week 4-1, or at least at Auburn, and all of a sudden you go into the bye week 4-1. We're a far cry from where Oklahoma was then. But I wanted to ask you, you kind of mentioned some of the roller coaster part of it. What is, I mean, they lose to Vandy, they lose to Tennessee. They escape one against South Carolina early in conference play, but then you mentioned they come back out. They beat Missouri. They beat LSU and do it dominantly on both sides of the ball. Have you noticed a change? Have you noticed a gear shift either offensively, defensively that's accounted for that? Has it just been simply playing better? What's been the difference?
Yeah, I mean, the defense has gotten a lot better and you've kind of fixed some of those like, for a while there, just Alabama could not get off the field on third down or against Georgia. It was against on fourth down. And it's just like the defense would make plays, but they couldn't put it all together. You're seeing the defense kind of step up and play a lot better. And then for a while there, too, is like Jalen Milroe forgot that he was a running quarterback. Alabama claims that he wasn't injured. It's kind of getting harder and harder to believe that he wasn't injured just because he's a totally like if you look at him against LSU and then look at him against Tennessee, and I know that the pressure there, you know, kind of influenced him as well, but like those are two different quarterbacks, and like so if he wasn't injured, then you know credit to Tennessee for totally affecting him. But you know, this team kind of runs through Jalen Milroe, so when he's confident and he's clicking, it's going to operate really well. I think it can be one of the best teams in the nation if everything's clicking right. Really, so far, it's just been a matter of kind of playing that complete game, whether it's, you know, getting Jalen and getting the offense in sync, you know, against Tennessee, right? You had the offense was pretty dormant, but the defense kept them in the game for a long time. And then Tennessee just finally pulled ahead against Vanderbilt. The offense was pretty much, other than some, you know, key turnovers, the offense was pretty much moving, but the defense couldn't get off the field. So you've lost in two times in basically different scenarios. It's really just for Alabama. It's about putting that complete game together, which that's what they've kind of been able to do. I mean, if you look, I mean, I don't even like count the Mercer game, but like if you look at like the Missouri game, if you look at the LSU game, like those are pretty complete performances. I mean, LSU, barring a garbage touchdown, they hold them to three, you know, to 6 points. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
You talked about Jalen Milroe somewhere or in there, and I kind of wanted to ask you about some of that. And I think the most interesting thing to me, and you kind of mentioned it with, it seems like they remembered he's a running quarterback again. It seems like there's been some common themes in the games they've won as opposed to the ones they've lost, where, I mean, you look at Georgia, it's 16 for 117 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. It's against LSU, it's 12 carries for 185 yards and four touchdowns. And it seems like in those games, he's not asked to do a lot as a passer. They've been able to rely on his legs. But it seems like, and maybe in the games where they've struggled, he hasn't gotten it going as much on the ground. He's had to throw it a little bit more. I guess just from his season as a whole, what have you seen from him? Has the roller coaster vibe kind of, does that kind of reflect maybe the season he's had too?
Yeah, it has. I think the thing with Jalen, a lot of it's mental. I think, you know, if you can get in his head, if he, you know, it's how he deals with pressure. You know, like if you get in his head and you're always in the backfield, he might panic. He might hold on to the ball too long, try to force something. And that's where, you know, I think like a Tennessee could get away with doing that. You know, when if I was looking at a blueprint to like beat Alabama, it'd be kind of like, you know, forcing Jalen to panic as much as possible, because I think sometimes he does lose touch of the easy decision. You know, like I think he's more concerned about the pass rush coming to him, and you know, he loses track of maybe the check down receiver or just the ability to take the 5 yards and run, you know. And if you can get onto him early, like was the case in Tennessee, where you know, you can kind of let those troubles like snowball, I think that that's where things kind of get tough for him. But on the same hand, if he can get that instant success like he had against Georgia, like he had against LSU, he can snowball the other way. He's kind of a quarterback that I feel like wears his heart on his sleeve, which, like, you know, that can be tough. That's something he probably has to reel in a little bit, especially when he's going to, you know, go to the next level next season, whatever, you know, opportunities he has there. He's going to have to kind of manage that. But that can be a double-edged sword because, like, sometimes, yeah, it can unravel and it can be bad. But when things go well for Jalen, he's untouchable. You know, he's probably the scariest player in college football when everything's clicking. So it's kind of the same thing I said with the team, is just getting that consistency. I mean, that's like the million-dollar question, though. I mean, it's really easy to say, like, oh, just be consistent, or just, you know, I mean, like, harnessing that and getting that to play out is a lot more difficult than it sounds. But that's kind of the thing with Jalen, is if you could put together, like, him at his best mental space, him at his, like, full confidence, and, then you start seeing some of his maturity, some of his development. Once you get all that clicking, I think he really can be like a first round quarterback. I don't know if I'd pick him in the first round yet, though, because they can't do that on a weekly basis.
Right. Well, looking ahead to this weekend, and I think if we've learned anything about the SEC, is it's really hard to predict it this season, right? I mean, almost more than anything, there's been a lot of close games, some shocking results. There hasn't been a clear dominant team, right, in the SEC this season. But I mean, despite all that, I think Bama has a lot of reasons to feel good, right? They there's a clear path to either the SEC title game or certainly even the playoff if they continue like they have been the last couple of weeks. Now they go into this game where they're a 2-touchdown favorite, even on the road against an Oklahoma team it's just been a struggle for them all year, particularly offensively. But I say all that to say, how do you think Alabama is approaching this weekend, just in terms of kind of knowing, hey, you can't assume anything, especially in the SEC this season, but also at the same time, the path to get to where they want to be is there in front of them. So how does Alabama see this matchup? And then for you, what are you generally looking for from an Alabama perspective this weekend?
Yeah, it's tough because, like, I mean, heading into the Vanderbilt game, everyone was talking about, oh, you got to avoid the trap game. You got to do, you know, this is a trap game. We've heard Alabama talk the talk about, like, avoiding the trap game. They put down, rat traps and everything before the Vanderbilt game. And, like, that was all fun. And we talked about all that. I don't think anybody really wants to hear that heading into the Oklahoma game, because it's the same situation, really. But, you know, Alabama's just going to have to prove themselves. I think one of the things that Alabama is feeling a little bit more confident is they were looking so bad on the road, at Vanderbilt, and then especially at Tennessee. And they put in such a great performance on the road against LSU that I think there's a lot more confidence that they've got some of those, you know, calls at the line, some of those signalings, whatever they're going to do, however they're managing the noise. I think they're a little bit more confident in getting things going in hostile environments like the one they're going to face this weekend. So I think there's a little bit more confidence there. But I mean, like, they're never going to say it. I wouldn't be shocked if they come out a little bit flat, just because they've heard about how good they are. And they're coming off this, you know, big win. They got to coast against the FCS team. And then you're also looking ahead to your rival. I mean, I know the Iron Bowl is not going to be like a sexy matchup, but it's still, you know, a matchup that a lot of them look forward to. I mean, look, Kalen DeBoer was asked on the SEC coaches teleconference about the Iron Bowl this week. I mean, Nick Saban would have tore the reporter's head off. Fortunately, Kalen DeBoer is a little bit more tolerant with those kind of things. But I think that, you know, I could definitely see Alabama maybe taking this game a little too lightly and maybe come out a little bit flat. I think there's definitely a respect towards Oklahoma. There's certainly a respect towards, like, what that game could be. It's going to be senior night for Oklahoma. It's a night game in a huge stadium. I think most people would put Memorial in like a top 10 top 10 college football stadiums. If not, it's like super close. So I think there's all a big respect over, you know, this matchup, but at the same time, I don't know if they're as laser focused as they were maybe heading into LSU.
I guess the last question I'll ask you is to just kind of put it simply, what's a matchup or a position group or a player, just whatever you think in terms of what are you going to be watching the most this weekend? What do you think tells the story of this game? Just what matchup or what area are you most concentrated on coming into Saturday?
As far as just the matchup analysis and like, you know, just trying to affect the game, I think, you know, Oklahoma's going to have to try to pressure Jalen Milroe. You know, if you're looking for like a way that the Sooners are going to win, the Sooners, like, they have a good defense. So just take advantage of that, probably control the clock. Maybe they can't do it as like in the same fashion that Vanderbilt did it, but like, you probably want to slow this game down a little bit. You're going to have to do well on the downs that matter. So your third downs, you know, extend drives, keep Alabama's defense on the field, and then maybe just kind of wear them out that way. And then maybe frustrate Jalen, force some turnovers. I think you're going to really have to capitalize on the moments there. From the flip side, from an Alabama perspective, if I'm looking at it, Oklahoma's got like the worst pass protection in the nation. I'm not trying to be dramatic. It's just like statistically. So Alabama's a team that's, you know, it's had its moments in pass rush, but it really hasn't gotten home on a lot of sacks. I think it ranks in the high 50s when it's normally, you know, a top 25, top 15 sacks defense. So I'm kind of just interested to see, you know, what Alabama is going to do in that regard. Will they get, you know, will the sacks start to flow? They lost one of their key edge rushers in Key Robinson, but they also got a super athletic guy in Quay Russaw. I think we had him as a high 4-star, but he's like a 5-star talented kind of guy. They've got him. And they've got Yanzi Pierre, another kind of 5-star guy. So they've got some talent that can rush the passer. LT Overton's a guy I think probably get drafted, probably a day 2 draft pick this coming draft. So I'm kind of interested to just see if they'll be able to exploit this Oklahoma offensive line and kind of maybe step up and maybe get things rolling on, you know, in that regard. And then, like I said, all the other stuff on the Oklahoma side, just kind of maybe trying to be just opportunistic and maybe catch Alabama sleeping a few times and then kind of make it a game late.
No, I agree with you. I think the line of scrimmage is going to be the key thing, especially Oklahoma's offensive line that struggled. I mean, look, they've given up the most sacks in the entire country this year. I do think they have shown a little bit more improvement the last couple of weeks, but I also think that the Bama defensive line is just going to be another really, really tough test for them. Before I let you get out of here, Tony, I don't know if you're big on score predictions or if you're big on general feelings heading into a game, but how do you see this one playing out?
I haven't thought about it, but I'm a big, just like go with the instant gut here. I'm going to go 34-10 Alabama. Does that sound, I don't know what the Vegas spread says about that, but yeah. I don't see Oklahoma moving the ball enough on Alabama. I just don't see that, you know, much, you know, this could be a shutout game. I'm giving the 10 because I think that, like, there's going to be, you know, there's Oklahoma's going to have a lot riding on this one. And, you know, I think they're going to be tough. But I think it's going to be kind of one of those games that's just kind of Alabama will be in control. They'll pull away with maybe a touchdown or maybe 10 points in the fourth quarter kind of thing, where Oklahoma was kind of in reaching distance and then Alabama just pulls away. I just don't see them moving the ball too much on Alabama enough for it to become a close game.
I think everything you just said is how Oklahoma fans are kind of feeling about. I don't think the vibes are very high in Norman heading into this one.
You know, heading into the season, you thought maybe this would be a good game. I always kind of thought that the Oklahoma's offensive, it's so hard to replace like your full offensive line, no matter what you do in the portal. It's just that you can't rebuild offensive lines that quickly. So I always thought that would be a problem, but I figured maybe, you know, by this time in the year, you know, I thought Jackson Arnold was going to be a way better quarterback than he has been this year. And then I thought maybe this could be a tough game because like that offensive line would be clicking by this time. And then I had a lot more faith in Jackson Arnold. So I thought this was going to be a little bit more exciting of a matchup than it's probably ending up being, but it's still going to be nice to see a classic matchup of, you know, two blue blood football teams.
Well, Tony, again, I appreciate you so much for giving us a few minutes of your time to preview this game. Everybody out there, go check out Tony, his work and his colleagues' work over at Tide Illustrated, over on Rivals. You guys do excellent work, so appreciate I highly encourage everyone to go check you guys out. Everything you guys are doing before the game and beyond, as Bama looks to be a team again that could be in the mix for another national championship. So go check them out, everybody here. And Tony, again, appreciate you giving me a few minutes of your time. And if you need any recommendations when you get into town, any places to go, anything, make sure to hit me up.
All right, man. Thanks much. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man. Now everything's normal and well-balanced in the force again, as I am joined as always by my co-host, Sir Coach Brian Clinton. And Brian, I should have done the regular intro with you, because I think the original plan was to do the segment with the two of us together, and then in the pod with Tony from Tide Illustrated, our section of the pod. And I told myself not to do the intro. Then I had women's basketball availability. I had to jump straight into the pod with Tony. And I don't know if there's any better encapsulation of this OU football season than telling myself don't do the intro and then doing the intro with him. Anyways, and I realized I shouldn't do the intro as I was doing the intro, and it was too late for me to pull back. So, Brian, can you think of a better summary of this Oklahoma football season than that? Nope. I can't.
That's about it. That sounds about right.
I literally got to the point where I was like, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiast, and I was like, oh crap, Brian's not here. What's up, Brian? What's going on, dude?
Not a lot, man. I'm all right. I'm good. Two more weeks left. Hang in there, I guess.
And that bye week wasn't nearly long enough. Not nearly long enough. We have a lot to talk about, though.
Yeah. We have a lot to talk about.
And we've already talked about earlier in the group chat about our plans to go to LSU, which feels like it's going to be tomorrow when that happens. But we've got a home game against Alabama. We're going to talk a little bit about that and a few other things that have come up this week. But Brian, before we do that, I think we both want to wish, or we both want to express well wishes, thoughts, prayers to Brent Venables, his wife Julie, obviously, and that family. I think it had been kind of something of a well known secret, but Brent made it public on Monday that Julie's cancer has come back and that she had surgery last week to remove a tumor. So obviously that's just not what you want to hear. We hope everything is good with them. And Brian, we talked about it earlier in the week, but man, this is not to say this is separate from all the football stuff that's happened on the field and with this program this year. Dealing with the struggles of OU's football program and then adding obviously a really, really unfortunate personal situation with a loved one on top of that. It's just, I can't imagine how stressful it's been for Brent over the last few months.
Yeah, that's, don't wish that on anybody. And that's just an impossible situation. My hat's off to those guys and the Venables family is certainly in our prayers every night, and we've been thinking about them a lot lately. And I just hope that has a good outcome and that she's able to beat this again. And I just can't even imagine trying to balance being the head coach at Oklahoma on top of standing beside your wife as she fights cancer. I just can't even begin to imagine that. So well wishes and prayers to those that are affected in all of that, and the Venables family is certainly on my mind quite a bit. So
yeah. I got a hot take for you, Brian. Cancer sucks.
Cancer's terrible. That's very
that's my hot take.
Yeah, it's very active in my family tree, and it is just, it sucks, man. I hate it. Absolutely hate it.
I do have to say, before we talk about some other stuff that we do need to talk about, look, criticism about the Oklahoma football program is valid. That absolutely. Sure. People who are not content with the state of the football program, absolutely reasonable. And we're going to talk about some of that stuff today. But I think George Stoya over at Sooner Scoop had tweeted that news, and someone responded to them That's terrible, but doesn't excuse the bad football program this year or something like that. I do want to say something. Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy. None of this means you can't criticize the football program, but like, let's recognize that some things are bigger than football, and also that these are two separate things. I think that is very, fortunately, a very big minority, and other OU fans can kind of see past all the football stuff when it comes to this. Don't be that guy. I think it's fair, right? Doesn't matter how bad things are with the football program. This is a separate and unfortunate thing. Don't combine the two. Don't. They're separate things.
I think it's a pretty clear reminder that there are human beings involved in all of this. You know, I think that gets lost sometimes, with hiring and firing and transfer portal and NIL and, you know, all this stuff, all the changes that have come to college football. I think some of the humanity in it gets removed at times. And at the end of the day, I mean, this is somebody that goes home and has a family and they're affected. And so, yeah, just, I would say we need to get back to don't say anything that you wouldn't say in person.
Like, it's perfectly reasonable to say, to express well wishes and be thoughtful of what they're going through without having to. Yep. You can do separate things. Brian, we do. I think that does speak to, there's just a lot of big picture stuff with this program right now. And that's weird when you consider that Oklahoma still has two football games to go, at least in this regular season. And that's a weird place for Oklahoma to be, because as much as they have two games, including Alabama is coming to Norman. The Alabama Crimson Tide's coming to Norman. And I think there's a lot of focus instead on some of the big picture stuff with this program. And we're going to get into some of that. But Brian, when it does come to this weekend, in terms of things to watch, obviously OU is a big underdog, but we got our answer. We talked about the quarterback situation last week. Well, we got our answer. It's going to be Jackson Arnold at yep. quarterback, and he's not only going to be a quarterback or going to be the quarterback. He's been named a starter, and Brent actually talked about that on Tuesday, that he was asked if Brent Venables was asked if Arnold being named a captain signals anything about Jackson Arnold's future with the program. And Brent said, can't predict the future, but we love Jackson and we believe in him. So I think that was kind of a signal that him starting this game doesn't necessarily suggest anything about the future. But it does reiterate that they remain confident in him despite some of the ups and downs.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to put it, I think, right? Ups and downs. But you were the one, I mean, we disagreed a little bit last week, but you were right that to throw Jackson Arnold back out there. I guess, are you surprised by that? Do you think this means anything I don't know how it could really mean that much for the future, maybe given all the instability, but just what your thoughts on Arnold being the starter this weekend?
Yeah. I mean, it just makes the most sense. He's the most, experienced candidate as far as what they've had this year running the offense. You know, Casey Thompson's obviously put a lot of football, but you know, the other thing that doesn't get talked about with whether or not to throw him out there is it's a guy that's got a pretty extensive injury history. Are you really going to throw him out there behind this offensive line against Alabama? Like, would you really be doing him any justice by doing that? To me, that's if you're really splitting hairs, I mean, to me, this just makes the most sense. It's one of those situations that I think you just kind of have to see what you have going forward. And if that's who they believe they can hang their hat on going forward, then that's what they're going to do. To me, this signals this coaching staff, and it doesn't surprise me. This coaching staff's focused on what gives them the best opportunity to win now. Like, they're not worried about the future. To me, it sounds like they're not really even worried about starting a guy or playing a guy just to see what they have going into next year yet. I think they're really taking this approach one week at a time. And that's what I would expect to hear from Brent Venables, and that's pretty much what we're getting. So, yeah, we'll see.
I will say that I said last week that if they threw Jackson back out there, that was that would mean they still have some belief in him as the guy moving forward. And I think that's still true to some extent. But mm-hmm. I would tell you, as we've gotten away from the pod and as we've gone through the last few days, I will say I think if we've learned anything over the last few days is there is just so much up in the air.
Yep.
And with the offensive coordinator search, there's still some guys that need to make decisions about whether they're coming back or not. And then obviously you throw the Michael Fasusi stuff in it, which I don't think we'll talk about that a ton just because I don't think either of us want to speculate too much on that. But can you keep the class together? Which guys are coming back? Which guys are leaving? There is something to be said about just playing, simply only focusing on what's happening right now. And there's got to be some belief that Jackson can give them the best chance to win right now. Brian, I will say this. If Jackson Arnold has I don't even think it has to be a win. I think if Jackson Arnold plays well on Saturday, maybe that does retool some things about how you think moving forward. If he doesn't play well, I don't even know what that.
Well, I mean, it all really lies on what Oklahoma does at the offensive coordinator position going forward. Like, that's going to have a major impact on who could be starting at quarterback. At this point, I think as hard as it is to do, whenever you're analyzing this team, as odd as that sounds, I have no idea. I mean, to me, it's pulling names out of a hat right now, like whether or not they're going to be here. Like, you have guys that you have a pretty good feel that are going to stick around and be back. But with how the season's gone, there's just so much up in the air, as you said.
I'm going to be curious to see who all goes through senior night festivities. And I don't think there's a ton of guys I need to go. That's something I'll do before we get to the game, is to see, get a comprehensive list of the guys that can return, even if they're in their fourth or fifth year of eligibility. The one guy I didn't get a chance to ask Brent about this today during the SEC teleconference. I tried. I was curious to ask about Jahlil Farouk because he mentioned he's considering, but we haven't heard the coaching staff. We haven't heard Brent Venables talk about it publicly yet. Not that I know of. And I did ask Brent about him and Dion on Tuesday, and I think there is some confidence that they'll be able to ramp up their snaps compared to the Missouri game.
Yeah.
We'll get the availability report tonight, so we'll see where we're at with that. But Brian, I wanted to ask you, because we haven't really talked about the offensive coordinator search on here. We do know a couple of things, and again, I think we both want to avoid some speculation. I mean, Brent was asked about Dan Mullen point blank yesterday.
Yep.
And he said he didn't want to comment on the search, then couldn't help himself and said, I reached out to him a year ago. I thought that was, it's like the most Brent Venables answer ever. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of buzz about Ben Arbuckle, the offensive coordinator at Washington State.
Same age as me and you.
He's a year older than me, bro. I'm not as old as you guys. Okay. I'm 28. Okay. He's 29.
Okay.
I'm 28. Okay. I'm not that old. God. I guess before I say anything else, just look, if we've learned anything, it's that anything can happen in a search like this. Brent said, you know, we've got to let people finish out their seasons, respecting their players and their teams and all that kind of stuff. If OU does wait till the end of the season to make a move, that's still a week and a half from now. A lot of things can change, but just your overall thoughts on where we're at right now. And yeah, give me your thoughts, Brian.
Well, yeah, I mean, Arbuckle and Mullen are the two guys that you hear the most about. For a little while there, Craddock was a pretty hot and heavy name, and that's kind of gone by the wayside for the most part. You know, I think both guys bring something interesting to the table. Mullen obviously is a guy that has more experience coaching in the SEC than pretty much anybody out there that's still in the profession. I mean, he's kind of just waiting for his opportunity to come back, and it sounds like wanting to be a head coach. And so, you know, we'll see kind of what that looks like. That may end up throwing a wrench into things. But on the other side, you've got an up and comer in Ben Arbuckle that has kind of just burst onto the scene here over the last couple of years, putting up a lot of points and yards at Washington State. It's a lot of, you know, they use a lot of air raid principles. Worked with Zach Kittley over at Western Kentucky, who's now the offensive coordinator at Texas Tech. So a lot of air raid principles, you know. And a few years ago, I may have been nervous, and really at first when I heard about it, I was kind of thinking, is that kind of scheme going to work in the SEC? And then I started thinking, oh, well, I mean, that's what Mississippi does. That's what Ole Miss does. Or that's what Ole Miss does. That's what Mississippi State does. Hype's doing that over at Tennessee. I mean, you have a lot of these wide open attacks now, and that's really what college football has become. So, and the other thing about it is Washington State runs the ball really well. And so there's a good balance to what they do. You know, I like the idea of having a young coordinator that can kind of come in and really take things over. It does give you a really young and energetic combo at coordinators under Venables, which is an interesting dynamic. But for the most part, I mean, I think if you land either one of those guys, you're doing great. And I've come around. I was not, I'll be completely candid. Whenever Arbuckle's name came up, my first thought was, are you really going to go for a guy that's not been around that long? Like this is the hire you have to make to save your job, essentially, if you're Venables. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized, okay, like this guy clearly, he might have that young up and comer feel that we saw Bob Stoops bring in several years back, a guy from Ensign. And either one of those guys would do that.
I'll tell you this, I'll just give my thoughts instead of trying to break down what I think is going to happen. If I had to say right now, I would be slightly surprised if Dan Mullen ends up being the guy. And I kind of, Ryan, he wants to be a head coach.
Yep.
That's what he wants to do. He wants to be a head coach. And to me, Brian, I've thought about this, and like, yeah, we've seen this history of OU offensive coordinators going on to be head coaches and having a lot of success of OU going to a head coaching gig. In a weird way, you might want that, right? Because that suggests that your offense is doing well. But at the same time, I think you want to kind of bring in someone that not only really wants the job, but like somebody that you could theoretically build with.
Correct.
And whether that means 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, you're not going to get that with Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen wants to be a head coach.
Right.
You know, the age thing just doesn't really make me that nervous. Yep. It really doesn't.
Yep. My concern was more just like the experience, but
that's
matter if you're good at it.
that's fair too. I think experience is that weird thing, because I completely understand that, especially where Oklahoma's at right now. If they finish 6-6 or 5-7, it's going to be risky to bring in someone that doesn't have a ton of Power Four experience.
Yeah,
a lot of people are going to make the connection to Lincoln Riley, and that it's kind of a similar situation. In terms of Lincoln Riley didn't have a ton of experience when he got to Oklahoma. You kind of have to get experience to have experience.
Right.
You know, so it's a yeah. Weird, I'll tell you this, and I'm more responding to, I think, some of the things that people like I see on our boards and social media, some of the concerns or some of the general feedback I see from fans. Don't let the air raid moniker or title scare you off. I'm not going to tell you how to feel about bringing in, if that's who it ends up being, if it ends up being a young guy without a ton of experience. I'm not gonna, you can feel however you want to feel, but what I would say is don't let the air raid moniker scare you. Not only is that, like you mentioned, Brian, kind of a common thing in football nowadays, but I think a lot of people associate air raid with chucking it all the time.
Yeah.
Washington State, Washington State's run the ball 378 times.
Yep.
They've passed the ball 311.
Yep.
They've actually run the ball more than they've passed. Now, I understand it as college football has adapted that what air raid means has also adapted. I think some people hear air raid and they think, oh, well, they're just going to throw the ball all the time.
Yep.
That's Texas not what Washington State has done this year. Yeah, go ahead, but that's a good point.
Yeah, Texas Tech is air raid. Taj Brooks, running back down there. What's he got? Yeah, 1,200 yards. He's 1,184 on the season. He's rushed for, I believe, every game he's played in this year. Yes, every game that he's played into this point in the year, he's had over 100 yards. And I believe that's all but one game. So 8 games, he's had 100 yards or more in every game, and that's an air raid system. You know, so it's really what it's come down to is, and I won't go down this rabbit hole for a long way, but what the air raid has turned into is very similar to what you saw with Jeff Lebby. You have you're spreading defenses out horizontally, forcing them to cover vertically. So you're creating these large gaps in a defensive scheme because you're forcing them to cover the entire field rather than loading everybody up in the box. And instead of having to have, you know, 8 guys or 7 guys in the blocking scheme inside, you have allowed the defense to create, there's a lot of space there to work with. And so you use those wider running lanes and you're able to gash people. If they can't, it really forces defenses to pick one. I mean, you're either going to load up to stop the run, or you're going to have safety help over the top. And so if you've got athletes outside, which Oklahoma obviously hasn't been able to take advantage of that this year, but if you've got guys outside and a quarterback and an offensive line that can allow you to throw the ball down the field, running the ball is going to be easy in that scheme too. So yeah, it's not, air raid does not mean what it meant when Hal Mumme and Mike Leach put things together. It's different now. So yeah.
I think the thing that have gotten other people excited is that, I mean, if it is Ben Arbuckle, could he bring John Mateer with him? A guy who has played pretty well this season. And Brian, I mean, you look at the stats, completing 63% of his passes, 26 touchdowns, 6 picks, averaging 270 passing yards a game. I think the bigger thing is that he leads the team in rushing attempts by 32. And he's got 695 rushing yards on the year, averaging nearly 5 yards a carry, and he has 12 touchdowns. Yeah. I mean, if you can, I mean,
he can ball. I mean, I watched a few games, like just quick highlights, and the dude can ball. I mean, for sure. So that's an exciting prospect.
And it's, I mean, I talk about this with, I talked about this a little bit with Tony before we started recording, but he asked me, he was like, what is Oklahoma going to do at quarterback? And I said, I think you talk to 10 different people, you'll hear 10 different answers. I don't know. I really don't. I think there's just so much up in the air, not to mention that the offensive coordinator search is going to have an impact on things. Who's even going to be on your roster next year? I would feel decently confident that Michael Hawkins will be. With Jackson, I don't know. What I told him was that if Oklahoma finishes the year 5-7, you don't have a ton of, you don't have the leeway to live through young struggles like Oklahoma maybe was hoping it would have this year, or that you would hope you would have. And if you could get someone like John Mateer, it's probably going to be your starting quarterback.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's just so much up in the air right now, man. I mean, who's going to be on the roster come spring football? What is the offense going to look like? I don't know how anybody could know that right now.
Well, and what's interesting for Oklahoma fans, what's just crazy to think about is you're almost in the opposite situation that you were with Venables in his first year, because you knew going into his first season after Lincoln Riley left, you knew once the portal exodus that wasn't nearly as bad as everybody thought it was going to be. Once that happened, you knew what you had on offense, and it was going to be okay because you had Dylan Gabriel coming in. But defensively, how many playmakers could you go and get? How many guys could you go and bring in on the defensive side of the ball to really round things out? Well, now I think everybody's pretty confident in the guys that should come back on the defensive side of the ball. That side of the ball has been really, really good this year. Can you go out and get the pieces that you need on the offensive side of the ball? And in addition to that, can you retain the guys that you do have that you know can be contributors, like at wide receiver, like it at on the offensive line? Can you keep those guys on campus and build for another year? And that's going to be the main concern. I'm very, very curious as to what the offensive staff looks like too. I have no idea. I mean, at this point, we've said it over and over again. Nobody on that side of the ball should feel safe about their job after the way the season's gone. Maybe the only guy that I think maybe gets a pass is Bill Beedenbow, and that's only because of his name and who he is in the grand scheme of things, in football circles. If you ask fans, he'd be one of the first guys to go. But, I think it is really interesting. What's the staff going to look like? What impact does that have on the transfer portal? There's just so much on that side of the ball that is likely going to look vastly different in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Not to mention, OU's got to get to signing day and keep this class together.
Yeah.
How is that going to have an impact on things? If you keep it together, how does that impact things? If you keep it all together for the most part, yeah, how does that impact things? If you lose some guys, if you lose Michael Fasusi, which that is not about, as I am not saying anything about whether they will or won't. I'm just asking, if they don't, how does that impact things? Yeah. Brian, I don't know. I did think it was interesting that Brent went out of his way because he was asked. He was asked about what his pitch would be to offensive recruits right now. And the first name Brent Venables brings up is Bill Beedenbow, that he has the biggest track record of success, both in college and helping guys succeed at the NFL. I don't know, man. I can tell you this. If the class doesn't fully stay together, if they lose a couple of key guys, that could have an impact. It almost certainly will have an impact.
Yep.
On what things look like. You got to keep Michael Fasusi, which
you do. And
I don't think it's an emergency right now. I don't think it is right now, but you got to keep him. He's the face of the class. You have to keep him.
Right. Yep. He's the anchor of that class. That's really his comments about being a Sooner for life. That's obviously, there's people asking questions about all of that. I don't know. I think you look at that and you take that with a grain of salt. It's a kid going through the process. He's going to be in town and going to watch Texas and then watch A&M in Texas the following week. And so it'll be interesting. I think the biggest thing though is, to me, if you end up retaining Bill Beedenbow, I think that all plays out. I think that all works out in time. I have no idea. That's just a gut feeling. I don't have any insight on that, but you keep the coach that has been building the relationship and the guy that has really convinced not just him, but several top end targets on the offensive line, they're going to have every opportunity to come in and make an immediate impact. And at a place like Oklahoma, that just doesn't happen very often. So I think there's a lot of positives still there. Right now, it just feels like all negative news because you're 1-5 in SEC play. So, like, I mean, get to the end of the season, hit the reset button on the offensive side of the ball, see what happens.
Before we get out of here, Brian, there is a game this weekend. We talked about it a little bit last week, but now it's here. Number 10 Alabama comes into town for a 6:30 kick on ABC. So everybody's going to see it. OU's a 2-touchdown underdog, according to most sites. Brian, I don't know if I have seen the fan base collectively as pessimistic about a game as Oklahoma's fan base is about this one. I don't know if I have. I've dug through some of the numbers and the season so far for Bama. I talked to Tony earlier in the pod. What, I guess, instead of trying to break down the game fully from X's and O's, just what are you looking for? What are you looking for this weekend? Is there a player? Is there a matchup? Is there a group? Is there a big picture? What are you looking for this weekend?
I think it's an opportunity for the defense once again to, now that they've had a bye week and maybe catch up a little bit on some rest. I think this is an opportunity for them to show their ceiling, which has been incredibly high. You know, that always gives you an opportunity if you can keep the other team off the scoreboard. On the offensive side of the ball, as much as Jackson Arnold has been the topic of discussion, I think Xavier Robinson is going to be the guy that I'm looking for, the guy that I'm watching. You know, the entire running back room is interesting right now, just in terms of what they have, who they're going to have moving forward, who they won't. You know, those top four guys, Sawchuk Barnes, Tatum, and now Robinson, I have no idea what to expect as far as what things look like next year, but if they are going as far as to allow him to be part of the media availability midweek and saying that they're not going to redshirt him, that he's going to be part of the game plan, to me that means he has solidified himself at least probably top two this week, depending on what things end up looking like with health. But that's an exciting development if you're an OU fan, because he's still a freshman, but the raw talent and the instinct is there. And I mean, it was, he really, the more I went back and looked at it, I think my initial comp was Samaje Perine, like just somebody that you would go back in Oklahoma's history of running backs. But the way that he runs was more like Kennedy Brooks, the more that I watched it. Like the patience, the willingness to let blocks develop, the always falling forward, the picking up more yards than it actually looks like he's picking up. You know, it really fell in line with what Kennedy Brooks did. And he was pretty stinking good for Oklahoma for a couple of years. So exciting to see him. And then, you know, this is just another opportunity to see who's invested and who's not. Cannot believe we're talking about that at this point in the season. But, I would not have – I would not have guessed that you could look online for tickets right now for this game and find some for under $100. But that's where we're at in the season. So
that's wild. Feed Xavier Robinson. Feed him the ball.
Yep.
Give it to him. I'm curious to see Javonte Barnes and Gavin Sawchuk, their status on the availability report, especially tonight. Brent mentioned in the teleconference that they're hopeful that Sawchuk will be back. He's been out for a while now. It feels like we've talked about it all year, but now with Xavier Robinson in the mix, I'm curious to see what that running back rotation looks like. Curious to see how the offensive line holds up. Brent mentioned, I mean, they're only expecting three departures on the offensive line. during the offseason. It's Michael Tarquin, Branson Hickman. Who am I forgetting? I'm going to go through the box. I'm going to go through the, my brain is fried. I'm going to go through the transcription real quick. But I mean, that's suggest, I mean, I that likely means that guys like Keith Ozaida, Logan Howland, if he's out there, those are guys that, that they're going to maybe need to lean on next season.
Spencer Brown's going to be the other guy.
Spencer Brown. I think OU fans will have a reaction to that. So, I mean, a lot of this offensive line, they're, the expectation is they're going to be back. So I'm watching that. And Brian, root for player, don't root for teams, root for players. This is the final home game for Danny Stutzman, Ethan Downs, Billy Bowman, Woody Washington. I think you're hopeful that they have the kind of send off. I don't know if that's going to be a win. Probably won't be, but I think you're hoping that it's at least competitive, right? And that those guys get to show out and have the kind of exit that that they deserve, because ultimately their careers have not gone like I think a lot of people hope they would from a team success perspective. And I mean, a lot of those guys came back for one more year and were hoping for a lot better than this. But when you see how much all those guys have grown, particularly Bowman, Stutzman, and Downs. I mean, Downs went from a guy that was not in favor with fans a couple of years ago to that's just a damn solid defensive end.
Yep.
Just damn solid. Yep. And Danny Stutzman, we know Danny Stutzman, we know Billy Bowman. I just, you know, I think there's a part of me that's like, if you're a fan, I think get away from the 5-5 label for a second, get away from the big picture stuff and just, I think, appreciate seeing these guys in Norman for the last time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because I mean, at the end of the day, as you said, it hasn't been the level of success that you wanted to, from a team perspective, but Danny Stutzman's one of the best linebackers, statistically Oklahoma's had. Billy Bowman has been one of the most opportune, playmakers that we have ever seen come through Norman. It seems like every time there's an opportunity for somebody to score on the defensive side of the ball, it's him with the ball in his hands. So seeing guys like that move on is going to be kind of weird. Not to mention the role that they all played in the transition of, you know, what has been the toughest stretch of Oklahoma football this side of 2000. You know, those guys were really a major part of the locker room staying together and building this, you know, culture that you have in Norman now. No, it hasn't really shown up the way that people wanted it to on the scoreboard yet. But I think you could say that the feeling in the locker room is a lot different now than it was 3 years ago. And that's probably in a positive manner. And these guys had a big, big role in that. So, it's going to be weird seeing 40 for the last time on the field. I, you know, that's a guy that I've always, just him being a Weatherford kid, like that's just awesome to me to be able to go and play for Oklahoma. And I've always had a soft spot. So it's going to be weird seeing him go, but, it's exciting, man. It's really cool to see what those guys are going to be able to do at the next level. And, you know, I think with Stutzman and Bowman, this is their last opportunity to show what they can do at home. And I think with the world watching, they're going to be fully aware of that and expect big performances from those guys.
Appreciate everybody tuning in, as always, to this installment of the Oklahoma Drill. You guys know the drill. You can always appreciate anyone that likes and subscribes here at the OU Insider YouTube channel, just to make sure you don't miss a single piece of content that we put here. If you're not a VIP member over at OUinsider.com, there's never a better time to do it. I say that every week. There's never a better time to do it. National Signing Day, or Early Signing Day, excuse me. Just 2 weeks away, man. And basketball season's underway. All kinds of content you're not going to want to miss. What's the latest updates with the offensive coordinator search? Come find out over at OUinsider.com. No one is plugged in better than our site is. But as always, appreciate you guys tuning in. Brian, good to do another pod with you, sir. And we'll rendezvous this weekend in Norman for a game against Bama. That still hasn't really hit me yet, but we'll have all things covered from this weekend over at OUinsider.com. Make sure not to miss it. Until then, appreciate you guys as always. We will see you next time.